Hello, hello, welcome back to this Season 13, Episode 29 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Tuesday, the 6th of October, and today we're going to be discussing community news and events and news headlines. And with me to discuss all those wonderful things are Mark.
Hello, hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad, thanks.
I'm very pleased to hear it. And Alan.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Yeah, you just sound okay, but sound a little bit Marvin this evening.
Okay, yes. Yes, the diodes down my left-hand side are a little bit painful, yes.
I'm sorry to hear that. Well, I tell you what, have you been up to anything since we last spoke that may be uplifting for you?
Yes. I have an ever so slightly cleaner house thanks to a new house guest whose name is Harvey.
Oh.
And he is a robot vacuum cleaner. And he traverses the floor in various rooms in the house, picking up dead skin cells, dust, hair, cat vomit, whatever, and keeps it in a little plastic box. And then I go and empty that little plastic box on a periodic basis. And this makes me happy. This is an uplifting thing.
I was going to say, I'm not sure who I feel more sorry for, Harvey having to collect all of that disgusting collection of stuff, or you having to empty out his box where he's been, aggregating all of this.
I decided a little while ago that I needed one of these things, and I had a chat to a good friend of the show, Will Cook, who has one, and he went traipsing off around his house videoing his doing stuff and sent me videos of his thing and explaining how it works and how good it is. And I bought exactly the same model, and it arrived, and I plugged it all in, and it's got a physical remote control like a TV, like a small remote control, and it's got an app, and it's got a big button on it, and you can just walk over to it and just press the button on the top and it'll just start hoovering, or you could use the app if you want to, or you could use a remote control. And it means that there was a certain amount of detritus underneath my sofa and that is now gone. You could eat your dinner off the underneath of my sofa now. It is that clean.
Wow, that okay. Would be a trick.
Yes.
So have you had to rescue it from any unfortunate situations?
It turns out, yes. But these robots are not particularly clever, and they become stranded sometimes, and I get little notification messages on my phone telling me when he's stranded or if he can't figure out the way back to the charger, because he trundles back
can't
to the charging
figure
point.
Out the way to the charger.
Yeah. And the charger, I mean, you guys both know the layout of my house. He's in the lounge, in the corner of the lounge is where the charger is. And he goes trundling off out into the dining room, through the kitchen, out into the bathroom and into my bedroom downstairs. And it's all like mostly wooden it's flat floor. And the lounge is carpet. So he can traverse all of this stuff. And, and usually he makes his way back, but sometimes he gets a bit stuck. Like sometimes the door will slide shut behind him. He'll be stuck in a room looking around going, hang on a minute, I can't find my way back to my charging point. And he'll send me a little notification.
It's very cute. Okay.
Yes,
and
yes.
And is Harvey a brand name or an affectionate pet name that you have given this assistant?
It's a pet name. He's named after Harvey Keitel.
I did wonder.
Who plays the part of a cleaner in
cleaner,
Pulp Fiction.
Right. I was going to ask that question at the outset,
bits of brain that he needs to clean up, though, or blood, or over the back of a car.
He's got cat vomit to deal with.
Yes.
Altogether a different.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Mark, have you been adding robot assistants to your home this week?
I have not. I have been adding games to my gaming collection.
Ooh.
Ah.
I'm not going to ask,
but should we even guess?
This week I are mostly been playing Hades, which is a roguelike game. You will be completely unsurprised to hear.
But of course it is.
This is from Supergiant Games, who made Bastion, which got quite popular, beer from one of the early Humble Bundles, I think. And it's a similar sort of style, isometric, hand-drawn style, interesting roguelike because it's got a strong storytelling element. You're playing the son of Hades, Lord of the Dead, and you've decided that you've had enough of living in the underworld and you're going to get out, but there's no way out for the dead. So you are fighting your way through the legions, and every time you die, you go back to the start because you're where dead people belong in the first place. And but each time that you start again, there's you start in the House of Hades, and there's people there who you chat to. And as you get further and further, the story progresses, and the people you meet and defeat are back there because they died as well. And you know, there's quite a lot of humor to it, and quite a lot of Greek mythology wrapped up in it. It's a lot of fun.
It's very stylish. I like the cartoon style and the neon colours as well.
Yeah.
It's very bright and vivid, but very cartoony at the same time. It reminds me a bit of Thundercats for some reason. I don't know why, but yeah. And the reviews show us overwhelmingly positive.
Yes.
So that's good.
I know. I'm playing a good game. Who'd have thought?
Yeah, I'm aware of this game. Because about 3 years ago, we did a story about Jim Sterling and his copyright deadlock that he discovered.
Yes, we did.
And ever since then, I've been a subscriber to his YouTube channel and, in fact, his Patreon as well. He reviewed this game this week, and he doesn't just think this is his game of 2020, but he puts it in his top three games of all time.
Oh, wow.
And waxed lyrical about it and said it's just a wonderful game. And I think he's played it through multiple times and was talking about the fact you can play it through many times over and take different routes through the game and different choices. And
how many hours have you clocked up yet, Mark?
I've probably played about 15 hours so far.
Wow.
And I bought it at the weekend.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Well, that's great.
So that's quite a lot.
Yeah.
And how much was it, just out of interest?
I can't remember, about 20 quid, I think. I got it on the Switch. I think it's about the same on Steam as well.
Okay, so you're playing it on the Switch, but it is also available on Steam. No idea if it works in Proton or not. So any adventurous listeners who get that, let us know if it works or not.
That is tremendous value for money, really, when you think about it. 20 quid and you've already clocked up 15 hours.
Yeah.
Games never cease to amaze me at how much, you know, you can invest. It feels like you're investing a chunk of money, but actually the amount of value you get out of it is tremendous.
Yeah, you make a good point. I always equate the amount you spend on a game to the number of pound coins I would have put into an arcade machine and the number of hours of fun and entertainment I would have got out of, like, depositing coins into an arcade cabinet.
I compare it to going to the cinema and buying a hot dog. And if it can compete with that, then brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Right, enough hot dog nonsense. Let's get on with the community news and events. So, Alan, what did you find in the community news this week?
Well, friend and colleague Marcus Tomlinson wrote a post on the Ubuntu Discourse about a new feature coming to the Ubuntu desktop. And I didn't really know anything about this until he shared a video and a little description of what it is. And I think, if I understand this correctly, the problem that they're trying to solve is that sometimes if you install a snap of a graphical application, the theme doesn't look right. It might not match the theme that you may have personally selected on your desktop. So if you've gone off-piste and chosen a new and interesting style for your desktop, the application doesn't look right. And this looks like it tries to fix that by auto-magically downloading the theme and applying it somehow to that snap to make it look right and consistent with the rest of your desktop.
Right. Yes, that's the basic idea. So the way that this works is you have decided you want to choose Foo theme and you put Foo theme on and then you run a snap and it looks like the default Adwaita theme where the rest of your desktop looks like Foo. And what this does is if somebody has published a snap of the Foo theme, it will automatically see that this theme is available as a snap and automatically go and install it and apply it so that your snapped applications now match the rest of your desktop environment.
Neat.
There's a little bit of integration work to go, but this has been a long time coming and one of those sort of rough edges that, you know, snaps have had for a while. And there's some great work going on here. So coming to a desktop near you soon. Mark, what did you find?
Well, OMG Ubuntu has reported that Groovy Gorilla now has its new default wallpaper. And it's a very groovy gorilla indeed.
Yes.
So it has the mascot, for sure.
It does.
Yes, no laser beams. Coming out of his eyes. In fact, quite you the opposite. Can't
even, yeah. They may be coming out of his eyes, but they're blocked by his Ubuntu-branded tinted shades.
Yeah, I need a pair of them.
I hope they'll be in the merch store.
So this is indeed the Groovy Gorilla mascot, which doesn't feature in the desktop images yet. So we'll be adding that in the next couple of days. Mm. And by the time you listen to this, head on over to the Ubuntu Discourse, because I'll be posting a full set of the wallpapers, coloured and grayscale, and the mascot himself as an SVG, so that you can make your own derivative wallpapers from it as well.
Does the mascot have a name this time?
Well, Gerald? None I've heard. I mean, it could be. I mean, there is a gorilla called Gerald, isn't there?
Yeah, we haven't always named them. They haven't always had names. Last one did, but yeah, I think we need to get audience participation on this one and come up with a name for. It's got to be a sufficiently groovy name for a gorilla.
Yeah. So here you go, listeners. Show at ubuntupodcast.org or at Ubuntu Podcast on Twitter. Send us your ideas for names for our groovy gorilla.
Speaking of which, Martin, there's another news story on that.
Yes, the Groovy Gorilla final beta has been released.
That's come around quick, isn't it?
Gosh.
Hasn't it? It's flown by. So this is what will become Ubuntu 20.10, which is due out for release at the end of October. And this features a Linux 5.8 kernel and GNOME 3.38. And from the desktop team, Active Directory enrollment is available in the installer.
What does that mean?
So if you are at work, or at home for that matter, and you have an Active Directory domain that you authenticate against, you can now choose to authenticate against your Active Directory rather than creating a local user account.
Is that a new thing that we've never had before?
Brand new.
Oh.
Coming to 20.10 for the first time. And we will be backporting that to a 2004 point release in the future as well, a much requested feature from our enterprise customers.
Mm, interesting. So now's a good time to try out 2010 with it being beta before the final release, I guess.
Yeah, we're into the last 3 weeks now. So now's a really good time to go and grab a beta, or if you're, you know, like to be on the rolling edge of things, upgrade your 2004 to 2010. You'll find details of how to do that in the beta release notes that are linked in the show notes.
I've upgraded all of my machines to 2010.
It's a cracking release, actually.
It does feel faster. It feels a bit snippier. I try and avoid saying snappier because that implies other things. So yeah, it's a bit more snippy.
Yeah, I've been getting random bits of feedback from people in the community, and they seem to like this one a lot. So I think we're in a good place.
Good.
What else did you find in the news this week?
Not only did I find, but I wrote this. So,
oh my goodness!
Yeah, I've added a pointer in here because I want to widen the attention to this post that I made on the Snapcraft forum. You may be aware that the graphical desktop software storefront, which goes under very, very numerous names, including GNOME Software, Ubuntu Software, and Snap Store, there's an editor's picks section in there, which highlights 9 or so applications that, you know, we think we want to draw your attention to. And previously, it was basically me, Martin, and Igor who would pick and choose what would go in that list. And we decided, why don't we just crowdsource this and ask the community what applications they think should be featured in that list? And I started a thread over on the Snapcraft forum because these are snaps. And so that felt like the right place to do it. But I wanted to get wider attention to this post. We did it 2 weeks ago, and it was successful. Loads of suggestions, some suggestions from people who like particular applications and want to share it with other people. And also suggestions from developers or publishers of applications. So people who've published somebody else's game or people who've written their own software and published it in the store and they want to raise the profile of it. We go through and curate the list and then we update the editor's picks on the Friday. So I started that a second thread Monday just gone. And this Friday we'll close that thread, gather up all the suggestions, figure out which ones are appropriate, which ones might not be. And we'll provide feedback for those that aren't. And for those that are, they get put forward to be featured. And it's useful because it raises the profile of these applications. Like some of them get quite a jump in installs. There's one that I published that happened to be listed, not because I chose it, somebody else did. And that one quadrupled in user base in a week after being featured. And another one that's got a slightly larger user base already jumped by 40%. Number of users just by being featured in the store. So it's quite useful for developers to get more users, but it's also useful for users to be able to discover new software that they didn't know about.
And you talk about 40% uplift. We've known this for some time, that when we feature something in the store, publishers tell us, hey, I've now got loads more users than I had 2 weeks ago, which is interesting because as power users, you know, snap install on the command line or apt install on the command line, we would be forgiven for thinking that's how everyone does it. But actually, it doesn't seem to be the case at all, because the stuff that's featured in the store, we always see an uptick in adoption when it appears in the graphical storefront.
Yeah. Weird. People on desktops use graphical storefronts. Who knew?
Yeah, indeed. So I read with interest that a project that I was aware of from the past has been updated and had a significant update at that. I'm not sure how you pronounce this. It's either TouchEgg or ToucheEgg. 2.0.1 has been released, and it's a means of exposing trackpad gestures in your Linux desktop. And it's had a significant update to bring it up to spec with all of the capabilities and technologies that exist in desktop Linux today.
Huh. This used to be called something else, I have a feeling. I think it was called something else and there was a trademark problem and it got renamed to that. TouchEgg or TouchEgg or whatever it is.
Right.
Yeah. I vaguely remember that from around the time of the phone project. So yeah, this has been around for a long while.
Well, the last time it had a significant update was 2011.
Gosh.
It had a minor update in like 2015, but it's now been brought up to spec with libinput support, which is how all of these touch devices interoperate these days. And it's now got one-to-one animation. So this is something that you and I touched on a few years ago when I was implementing this stuff or prototyping it in Ubuntu Mate. You were saying, well, if you start doing something, can you pause partway through? And well, this is the implementation of that. And it supports swipe and pinch gestures. And then you can map different types of swipe and pinch gestures to maximizing windows, minimizing, closing, tiling, changing desktops, showing the desktop, or sending key macros or running commands.
Oh, this is very nice. This would actually tie in very nicely with a tiling window manager, wouldn't it?
It would rather, yes. So we'll have a link to the GitHub project in the show notes, where in their releases page, you will find a .deb file that you can install and try out. I haven't tried it out. I've read about it and it's on my list of things to do. I just haven't got round to doing it yet.
So I've just checked the repository and yep, you're right. It hasn't been touched for a little while. And then there's been a flurry of activity and I'd like to retract everything I said about it being renamed of another project. I was wrong. It's not. Forget.
Yeah, it's said something that. Else.
That's something else entirely.
And Mark, what did you find in the news this week that might not be dead?
Once again, Mia 2.1 is not dead. Among other things, it now works on the Raspberry Pi 4. X11 applications can now be run in a confined desktop via X-Wayland, and a bunch of other bug fixes that come with implementing a brand new display stack. I don't know what that means.
I think the suggestion there is when you implement a brand new display stack, you're going to find bugs.
Oh, I see.
Like historical stuff doesn't work on this new display stack. And there's a whole load of X related stuff in here, like right. for X Wayland. The thing that caught my interest was the Pi 4, because I've tried using appliances with a full screen, you know, graphical environment. And I was doing it on a Pi 4 and it frustrated me that it didn't work. So I'm glad they fixed that. So I'm going to have another go at running like maybe emulators and things like that full screen on a Raspberry Pi under Mir, which I think might be a fun thing to do.
Yeah, sounds good. And astonishingly, we have events this week. So,
good golly.
Alan, what's the first event that we've got here?
The first one is a celebration, and it is that the Free Software Foundation is 35 years old.
Good Lord.
GNU Herd's nearly there. And they're having an anniversary. Sorry, that was just an easy swipe to make. They're having an anniversary party on Friday, October the 9th, at 12 Eastern, that's 4 o'clock UTC, until 5 Eastern, that's 9 o'clock UTC, in the FSF channel on Freenode IRC.
Oh, there ain't no party like an IRC party.
Totes my goodness. I think actually there's going to be video presentations and stuff as well. Some pre-recorded, some live. And they've got a website. I think it's fsf.org/event/FSF35, where you can find out more. We'll put a link in the show notes. But it's all part of the celebration of them, you know, being 35 years old and lobbying for freedom for the user for all those years.
And Mark, what have you found?
Registration for the Linux Application Summit is now open. So this is an event, I think we've spoken about it a few times before.
We have.
So this is bringing together people who want to make applications for the Linux desktop, basically, in general. It's not tied to either KDE or GNOME. It's a coming together of the communities of graphical Linux developers.
Yep.
And I can probably tell you when it is if I pay attention. It is November the 12th to the 14th, and it's online. You can find it at linuxappsummit.org.
And finally, we have Mini DebConf. And it says here that Mini DebConf Online 2 Gaming Edition is 4 days of Debianites working together to learn, have fun, and improve Debian. Why is it called Gaming Edition?
I think they're focusing on how they can do things to improve gaming on Debian, basically. Huh.
Okay.
Yes.
So we'll have a link to the show notes, and that will be taking place on the 19th to the 20th of November, and their call for papers is open now. And with that, let's move on. And we've moved on to this, the news headlines for grown-ups. And I say for grown-ups, my news. Actually, no, this is news for grown-ups. This is news for old people. We had this discussion a couple of weeks ago. So I'd like to say I found this myself, but I didn't. Alan found it for me, but I thoroughly approve. This is a project called Mock A65XX. And it's a project to design a Universal 6502 CPU replacement. So it's to reverse engineer and create edge level exact replacements for the MOS 6502 processors and its derivatives.
What are they then?
Awesome. Is what they are.
Pull up a chair, Mark. Listen to the old people.
Let me tell you a story.
Is this one of those ones where we're playing vintage computer top trumps and you start arguing about which one's the better processor?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, yes. Exactly what happens. This one is the best processor. The one we're talking about right now is the one that always wins.
This is the one that nobody uses anymore, whereas the Z80 is the one that's still manufactured and still in use. Yes.
I have several of them in computers behind me and they work fine. But what I like about this is that it enables you to... It implements a number of the 6502 family derivatives, including the 6510, which was also known as the 8500, which is what was used in the Commodore 64. So the creator of this project has got their first silicon prototypes, or their final silicon prototypes, that they're testing. And I was scouring the page looking for the buy it now button because I really wanted one of these. Because earlier in the year, I created a Commodore 64 based on original silicon, but a modern motherboard. And I also got some FPGA implementations of the SID chip. And this would be great for those people that are struggling to find some of these old CPUs and what have you to actually, you know, bring old computers back to life. So I'm very interested in getting one of these at some point and building a Commodore 64 with it.
It's pretty funky. It's got little, not jumpers, but like solder joints on the bottom that if you bridge the gaps, it changes the personality of the chip that's on the in the circuit, so that you can, you know, pull the chip out, and if you want it to be a different type of chip, you can put a solder across two pads and then put it back in, and it's a different processor. It's pretty cool.
And I looked at that very carefully, and I came to the conclusion that even with my ropey soldering skills, I think that is within the realm of possibility for me to achieve.
That is minimum level soldering achievement. It really is. Is smearing solder between two pads.
So, Alan, what did you find in the grown-up news this week?
Well, good and bad. DigitalOcean has sponsored an online hackfest throughout October, and the goal of this is to inspire new people to contribute to open source projects. Mm-hmm. And it's a regular thing they do, and it's a month long, and the goal is to get people doing pull requests on open source projects in places like GitHub and get people used to the tools, familiar with the tools, get people involved, get more people working in open source, and generally raise the profile of open source and raise the profile of these applications. However, they offer free swag, basically t-shirts, for people who are successful at this. And the lure of a free t-shirt seems to have been a little bit too much for a lot of people. And they've been creating what some people have said are useless, and some people have said, you know, not super useful. I mean, some people have been very unkind about these pull requests that people have been making, because people have been doing low quality pull requests in order to qualify for a t-shirt. Some of them have been putting boilerplate text on a page in a README, updating the README for a project. Some of them have been as little as adding a full stop to a sentence, or adding a single line doc type to an HTML template or something. They've been really, you know, minimum effort contributions. Some of them even say in the pull request, here's my pull request, give me my t-shirt, you know, kind of thing. Where's my t-shirt? And so there was a bit of a brouhaha about this after a chap called Joel Toms wrote a blog post titled "How One Guy Ruined Hacktoberfest 2020 #drama and that attracted a lot of eyeballs, and so it's been a bit of a drama for a couple of days.
So I read that blog post with interest, and the way these pull requests weren't all coming from one person.
No.
Person with a large, almost 700,000 subscriber YouTube channel posted a video about how to take part in Hacktoberfest, and maybe have been a little bit encouraging in how to game the system. And a vast number of these pull requests to projects that featured in that video were basically the same pull request over and over and over again, with the same description, the same changes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's why they were sort of referred to as being spammy.
Yes.
And the individual behind that YouTube channel wasn't particularly apologetic or corrective in, you know, how he approached this to sort of try and persuade his audience to maybe not spam the projects with hundreds of pull requests that they had to process.
He did remove the video, which was one thing.
At the point I read it, that hadn't been done. So that's interesting.
Yes. I actually saw some people describe this as a distributed denial of service attack against open source maintainers.
Right.
Because people were having their inboxes filled with notifications for these pull requests, which were just nonsense.
And it takes some, you know, cognitive load for you to deal with those. You know, you could say, well, it's just spam, delete it. But it's not. It's pull requests on your project, and it clutters up your Git repo. DigitalOcean reacted and they made the process a little bit more regimented and made it opt-in. So you have to add a flag to your project to say you're part of this, in which case, if you don't do that, then, you know, these useless pull requests won't qualify. So fair enough. But it certainly does, it rings bells with me, because we've seen this in Ubuntu when we've tried to cast the net wide to get contributions. If there's any kind of reward, be it monetarily or swag, there are people on the planet who will do the absolute minimum and then demand their reward. It's just a cultural difference between those people who think that everyone has got this egalitarian sense to contribute to open source and other people who just say, he said free t-shirt, what do I have to do? What button do I have to press to make the t-shirt happen? And I think they need to think more carefully about how they run these in the future. But it needs us to think more carefully about how we engage with these people, because that's a cultural difference between us and these people. And if we want those people to be involved in open source, then we need to approach things differently and not just offer free stuff to get it done, because it'll attract the wrong people.
Indeed. So, Mark, what stories did you find about software buckling under the quantities of data?
Well, a story has been doing the rounds in the UK press that Public Health England have missed a load of contact tracing records due to a dodgy Excel import. So what happened here was that a load of data was being collected in CSV files, as you do, and then they were imported into Excel for processing, as you do. However, the file that they were imported into was a .xls format, which is the old Microsoft Office 97 format, not the more modern XLSX format. And the old one can only handle 65,000 rows of data in a single sheet.
And you're telling us there was more than 65,000 rows?
There was about, I think, somewhere in the region of 15,000 more records than that, which should have been followed up for contact tracing and then weren't until this was discovered a few days later. Now, obviously, you know, this is bad for the reasons that it's bad, but you know, you saw quite a lot of people saying, oh, well, you obviously don't use Excel for managing data, and oh, this is a stupid mistake. What were they even thinking? But I don't think this sort of thing is probably as uncommon as you'd expect.
Yeah.
No, I've encountered this before. When I used to work in aviation, we had a means of dumping the black box flight recorders to CSV.
Yeah.
And of course, you load that into Excel and it blows past 65,000 rows pretty quickly, because we're looking at tens of millions of rows of data.
Yeah, yeah.
And for that very reason, when we were looking, that isn't the way flight data is transmitted around, but sometimes it's all you can do to like get at something that you need to look at.
Yeah.
This is not for like accident investigation. This is for other kinds of monitoring. But our solution was to use LibreOffice to import the CSVs into LibreOffice, which could accommodate those many millions of rows of data. No problem.
Interesting.
The people who proclaim with authority that this kind of thing doesn't happen and, oh, these people are so silly for using Excel, are out of touch, and they don't realize that normal people reach for, you know, when they need a hammer, they reach for the nearest hammer, and Excel is a pretty spiffy hammer to be reaching for, and it has lots of features, and people reach for it and they know it and they use it. I've worked in large organizations where people all over the organization had special spreadsheets and they wouldn't share them. They were, you know, internal to that group. Every single part of the company had special spreadsheets somewhere. And once you started digging, you'd find loads of them all over the place, and people rely on it for business continuity. And if that spreadsheet went away or broke, yeah, the business would be hosed in some way. So it's way more common than tech bros think.
And there was one last news article that you found, Alan.
Very exciting, this is. I don't like the way it's framed, though. The failed Ouya game console seeing work for mainline Linux kernel support. It didn't fail. Well, okay, it did. So for those who don't remember, the Ouya was a crowdfunded Android-based games console. I mean, it was a very small box. It was a phone without the display, basically. Had an HDMI port plugged into the TV, came with a controller, and it had a storefront you could install games from, and you could play games. And I backed it on Kickstarter or whatever, and I used to play with it with my kids, and it was great little console. There were some games on there that we've now later purchased on Steam, and we still play to this day. There's some real belters on there. And the kids loved it. Ouya was sold to Razer, and then Razer shut down the back-end storefront, so you can't download apps for it anymore. You can sideload Android apps, because it is Android under the covers. But an independent developer has been working to get mainline Linux kernel support for the Ouya game console. It's a NVIDIA Tegra SoC inside this little tiny box. But if you can get proper Linux on it, you could potentially run proper games on this little thing, on this little Tegra GPU. And it's got controllers, you know, already supplied that have radio. They're not wired. They're wireless controllers. So it'd be a nice little box to put under the TV. It's not super powerful, but for some games, you don't need super powerful. Mm. Maybe you could stream them from somewhere else or something. It's a handy little device. I do still like my Ouya. Still have it.
Do you use it?
No, it's currently in the loft.
But it's not on eBay yet.
No. The kids every so often do ask me, can we get the Ouya out and have a play with it? And, you know, I haven't yet, but I may do.
Okay. And what was their top game on the Ouya?
So there were three. There was Towerfall, which is fantastic multiplayer, same screen game. And there was one called No Breaks Valet.
Ah, I remember we played that once, yeah.
No Breaks Valet is fantastic, where you come crashing in from the side of the screen and you have to try and hit the brakes, but there are no brakes. You've got to try and steer the car into a parking slot. And you like bump other cars out of the parking slots. You get points at the end of the round for how many of your cars are in parking spaces and how many aren't. And the other one that I discovered through the Ouya was Bomb Squad.
Oh, Bomb Squad is ace.
Yeah. So it was really good at all on screen multiplayer in the same room games. It was just fabulous.
Lovely. And with that, let's move on. And I say move on, but that is the end of episode 29. So if you would like to send us your great, great feedback, you can email us at show@ubuntupodcast.org, or you can join our Telegram chat, ubuntupodcast.org/telegram. And if you are seeking a fine, fine VPS, then head over to bitfolk.com, who've been providing our VPS since the podcast began. And in fact, it's the same instance that's been updated all the way from Ubuntu 6.06 to 18.04. So in your face, Arch Linux users, it's a 14-year install. Go us. Thank you all for listening, and we'll speak to you next time.